Fred Rugged and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. A lot to get to today. And let's get started with this. Dodger fans, I don't know if you're going to feel slighted or not, but when the times came out for the NLCS, the Dodgers get the primetime game on Friday, Rodney. So they get the national spot.
Yep.
East Coast will get to see them at the proper time. But on Saturday, they get the 1 o'clock game because you've got Boston and Houston in the prime time slot. Does that mean anything?
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. I mean, look, the Friday night thing is the Dodgers and the Brewers are the only show in town. The ALCS does not start till Saturday. So you got two games on Saturday going. And it's Boston and the World Champs. Now, let's not be naive and say that, you know, if the Houston Astros are playing the Minnesota Twins, would that be the same thing? No. It's the Boston Red Sox. You know, one of the top three iconic brands in baseball. So, yeah, and they're playing the world champs. So to feel like, oh, we're slighted, no. I get it. I understand. The Dodgers are playing the Brewers. Now, if the Dodgers were playing the Cubs, then you may say, oh, what in the world? No. Cubs-Dodgers would be the primetime game.
All right, so we will get the game times for the games at Dodger Stadium, hopefully later this afternoon, maybe before we get off the air. And if we get those, we'll let you know. First two in Milwaukee, next three at Dodger Stadium. If you look at the roster, Rodney, compared to where they were last year, let's just do this for a second. A couple of major additions, but the major additions have made all the difference. Think about last year's team that went to the World Series. Who was not on that team? Manny Machado was not on the team.
Right.
David Freese was not on the team.
Dozier
was not on the team. Max Muncy
right.
was not on the team. In the pitching staff last year, Walker Buehler was not there, and Ryu was hurt.
Yep. Mattson was not there.
Look at the difference in the roster, because I guess the core is the same, but those additions, those changes, those pickups really have meant the difference this year.
Yeah, no, I think so. And time will tell, you know, how much it makes a difference going forward. But they've been great additions. I think, you know, nobody foresaw what Max Muncy was going to do. Not even probably Max Muncy, but he's had an incredible season and he has delivered. And when everybody said, oh, he's going to have a slump or he's going to fall off, he's continued to work himself back, had the big home run in Atlanta. I mean, he has definitely delivered, and I don't see anything stopping with him. Manny Machado has just been steady, and I know people want more out of him, and they want him to hit a home run or a big hit every time he comes up, but he has been good for the Dodgers. And then, you know, yes, Brian Dozier has struggled a little bit, but he's a veteran presence, but David Freese has been that guy. He has been the best hitter in the National League in September since they got him. He came up with a big hit the other day. It's a good mixture of guys that are in this clubhouse, and you got to feel real good about the Dodgers right now.
You know, and this one's on me because I left out Matt Kemp. He wasn't here last year.
No, he wasn't. You know, and that's another one. You think about before the All-Star break and the way the Dodgers were struggling, it was Matt Kemp who kind of kept them in it. He really kept them relevant throughout that whole time, became an all-star. You know, they've used him in spot roles right now, but he kept the Dodgers relevant and close to the top in that first half of the season. They wouldn't be where they were had it not been for Matt Kemp.
So this morning, Dave Roberts was on with Dan Patrick, and they were talking about Clayton Kershaw. And Clayton Kershaw getting the start in game one, which means, really, if it's a seven-game series, you figure he'll go three times, right?
You would think, you know, if it goes seven, that's why you start him, is that he has an opportunity to pitch three times. And that's the guy you want. So the rest and everything worked out the right way, because had it gone to a game five, Clayton would have pitched in game five against the Braves and then wouldn't have been available for game one. So this works out great for the Dodgers that he can be a starter three times in a seven-game series.
All right, so here's Dan Patrick talking with Dave Roberts about Clayton Kershaw.
He was brilliant in game two, but did you think, like deep down, he still had to prove a little bit on this big stage?
I don't think that it's in that one particular game, that's a moment where we decided to start Hyunjin Ryu because of the rest factor, where there was a lot made of that. I think the question of the postseason is a bigger question, and that's a question Clayton can answer. But I think in that particular situation, I don't think that – I do believe that he has nothing to prove, but I do think that there's a pride, there's an ego component that comes into it that wants to, pitch well, and that's what he did.
That's what he did indeed.
Yeah, I mean, are you buying that it was strictly a rest situation with Clayton in the first game where they pitched for you?
No.
You think it was something else?
Yes. No, I'm not buying it was a rest situation. Ryu had been hot. Kershaw had been up and down all year. They wanted to go with Ryu. I think to the relief of the Dodgers, to the euphoria of Kershaw.
Yeah.
He had an incredible outing in that second game. And I think now, maybe mentally, Rodney, he's in a different place than he was.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I think that for the first time probably in his career, there was a question of, is he the real ace of the Dodgers? And he came out and responded like you know Clayton Kershaw can, and he did. But I do believe that it was, I don't want to say it was a tactical decision to sit him. I think that it worked out well because, you know, the fact that Ryu had been hot, like you said, he went out and pitched the gym. They won. Now, psychologically, for Atlanta, they're down 0-1. And, oh, by the way, we got to face Clayton Kershaw. And so that put more of a dagger, I think, in Atlanta than him starting game one, where they could say most teams have said in the past, oh, yeah, we're kind of probably going to concede that game because it's game one, Kershaw's on the mound, we can give up game one, let's go back and get the next guy in game two. Well, they lost game one, and then all of a sudden, oh, wait, we got to face Kershaw in game two. We're down 0-2.
All right, Dave also talked with Dan Patrick about the Dodgers' offense and not exactly moving guys around, but going and playing the long ball game. And here's what he had to say.
We do walk a lot. We homer. We do walk a lot. And I think that, you know, a lot of it, though, Dan, is that when you can get guys on base and create stress and traffic, you know, the one hit that you're looking for can put up a crooked number. But I think that, yeah, we might not hit and run as well as other clubs or single, but we do get guys on base.
All right. Is that a nice way of saying we don't move guys around and run when they're in scoring position?
It is like, yeah, it's a nice way of saying that we do it a certain way, and that's what we're going to stick to. Although, you saw in the Atlanta series, they ran a little bit. We saw Cody Bellinger stealing bases. We saw Puig stealing bases. Although, you know, the delayed steal by Puig was something I think that warranted a talking to, as we saw Dave Roberts giving him a little, you know, earful. But it was a little bit different. A little pep talk. But yeah, no, this is what they've done. This is who they are. You know, it's strange that they are a team that hits a lot of home runs, but they are also a team that works the count. And that was pointed out in the Atlanta series, you know, by John Smoltz, who was doing the games with Joe Davis, that the Dodgers are one of the best teams in the league at working the pitch count. You don't always see that from a team that hits as many home runs as the Dodgers do.
Well, they walk a lot and they strike out, but that's a function of trying to hit home runs, don't you think?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. But you don't always see that from a team that, you know, that hits a lot of home runs that are as patient. Most of the guys are as patient at the plate. They may strike out, but they're taking the count to 3-2. They're fouling off a lot of pitches. If you saw that, you know, that bat by Jock Peterson, the bats by Justin Turner, they are very good at working the pitch count. For being a team that is noted for hitting a lot of home runs.
You know, though, I'm not sure you want to work the pitch count against the Milwaukee starters because when they come out, you get to their bullpen.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to go up there and start swinging right away.
Keep those guys in the game as long as possible. Whoever starts for Milwaukee, we want them to go seven.
Yeah.
It had to be like a 3-0 Dodger lead or 4-0 Dodger lead where it's not, you know, it's not an onslaught that to get him out of the game early. You want to, you know, prolong that starter as long as you can because their strength, like you said, is their bullpen.
And maybe given the way the Dodgers use analytics and look at things, maybe they think about that. And maybe you will see them go up early and try to get their hacks to keep those guys in the most bizarre way in the game, yet scoring runs against them before you get to the bullpen.
What are you trying to say? They're going to go up and not try to score as much as they can early?
No, I think what they're going to do is try to score as much as they can early, but I think they're going to do it quickly. Yeah. I think that's what they're going to do. I mean, if you just look at it, and if you play the numbers game and the way their bullpen is, why wouldn't you want to strike quickly, strike early,
yeah,
get your swings in, put runs on the board?
I think it's got to be a slow burn, Fred. I think the best scenario, yeah. I mean, you're not going to go up there trying, you know, oh, we don't want to get this guy out of there, because if they can score five runs in the first, they're going to do that. But I do think the best scenario for the Dodgers is to get, you know, one run in the first, two runs in the second, another run in the fourth, things like that, that maybe keeps a starter in the game longer, as opposed to coming out with a big time crooked letter inning, in the second inning to say they put up five in the second, and all of a sudden that starter's out and they're in the bullpen game for the Milwaukee Brewers, which is, you get to their strength now.
All right. Well, let's find out about their strength and their weaknesses when we come back. We'll go to Milwaukee. Robert Murray will join us. He covers the Brewers for The Athletic. We need a preview of what these guys look like and what we should look out for. He'll be on the show. And later today, LeBron James and Lonzo team up for the first time. We'll get into that. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, AM 570 LA Sports. All right. Somebody needs to win $1,000. Let's put a grand in your hand.
Now is the time. Grab your phone, win $1,000. Text the keyword luck to 200-200. That's luck to 200-200. Ding. You'll get a text confirming entry, plus iHeartRadio info. Standard message and data rates apply.
Good luck.
And don't forget,
answer the text, answer the phone. That's the only way we can put a grand in your hand. If you get an unknown number, unknown call, somebody may be calling that you don't even recognize or texting you. If you text in to try to win this thing, you got to respond. That's the only way we put a grand in your hand.
All right. Somebody's going to win, and we want it to be you. Now let's learn more about the Milwaukee Brewers. And joining us, the man that covers the Brewers for The Athletic in Milwaukee, Robert Murray. Robert, thank you for jumping on today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Okay. So start with this. We know nothing about the Brewers. Give us an overview of the Brewers.
Yeah, so they are a team that has been very aggressive in the last, I would say, 8 months in upgrading their team. They started with Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, obviously, and it has just turned into a frenzy of different moves at the trade deadline. They also added guys in the offseason that really weren't too big in terms of like a Wade Miley or Elise Chacin. They've really been complimentary moves, and it's been a very good last little run for them. And it's turned into this kind of a postseason run for them.
Yeah, talk about that. You're talking about their complimentary moves, but it was really the Yelich and Cain that the Brewers got have been the catalyst for these guys. I mean, Lorenzo Cain has been there, done that in the playoffs, won a World Series. You know, Yelich obviously is a tremendous hitter, but it almost felt like he got a new lease on life when he went to Milwaukee. Talk about the impact of those two guys.
Yeah, no, and you're talking Lorenzo Cain and Yelich, correct? I just want
yes,
to make sure.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Cain, he's a guy that has really been known for his defense, and ever since he's come to Milwaukee, his offense has been really what's been on display, along with his defense, I should say. But from an offensive perspective, he's been able to put the ball in play a lot. He's been able to be a lot more patient at the plate as well. He's been taking a lot more pitches, which has resulted in more lengthier at-bats, and pitchers are making mistakes, and he's taking advantage of them. I mean, they haven't been via the home run ball, but more singles. And he's been really effective in front of Christian Yelich in the lineup. And speaking of Yelich, he has been absolutely unbelievable since coming to Milwaukee. His power numbers are way up. He says he's not doing anything different, and I believe him. He's coming more into his body. He's understanding his body a lot more, and we're just seeing the impact from it. I mean, and a lot of people don't really value his defense too greatly, and I mean, if you look at the WAR numbers, he actually has a negative WAR in the outfield. From watching him up close for the entire season here, I would argue that he's actually a plus defender. And that's something that he really doesn't get credit for. But he plays a very good defense in the outfield along with his offense. And he's been the MVP of the league. And he's been a huge tool for them. And he's actually a lot more than they could ever really expect it.
Robert Murray from The Athletic in Milwaukee, our guest on AM 570 LA Sports, Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete. He is teaching us. This is called Brewers 101. We are learning about the Brewers. Now, Craig Counsell says that bullpen, which is so incredible, and that entire pitching staff, They're not really pitchers. They're out-getters. They're just put out there. And that takes analytics, Robert, to an entirely different level.
It does, yeah. Like, I mean, they've really been playing the matchups, too. We saw Brandon Woodruff start the last game there for him. And it's something that they don't really, as you said, it's not like your gut-based. It's more analytical-based. And it's really worked out for him. I mean, Woodruff has been a stud for him.
Thank you.
And sorry, I'm just paying for a gas as we speak. And no, like,
put it on Woodruff Fred Rogan.
Yeah, put it on my card. It's fine.
I'll make sure to do that. Yeah, but no, like, it's been like the initial outgetters. It was an interesting strategy when they initially began it with the relievers. But the more they've done it, the more it's paid off, and it's been able to hide the flaws in the rotation. And we're gonna probably end up seeing that sometime in this series, I would imagine. I mean, maybe they don't want to start a Gio Gonzalez type or anyone like that, and they can go to a Brandon Woodruff or maybe even a Corbin Burns or Dan Jennings for a batter like they did earlier in the season. It gives them a lot of different ideas, and it's paid off for them. It's been a really...
You still with us?
I am, yeah. Oh,
okay. Hey, Robert, out here with the Dodgers, obviously winning their sixth straight NL West title, moving on to the NLCS. It's almost like we expect it out here. This is something that the Dodgers were ready for, even with the ups and downs of the season. It was, and I think you talked to most of the guys in the clubhouse, they expected to be in this situation. Is this the same thing you can say for this Brewers team? I know they got hot at the end, but all season long, do you think they felt that this is where they were expecting to be?
Yeah, I can tell you this. They are a very confident bunch, but I don't think they expected a run quite like this. They won 11 straight games, and they look like the favorite in the NL to go to the World Series. And I think it's even catching them by surprise, but also at the same time, they're confident in what they're doing. And it's showing on the field. I mean, they're playing loose, even though they have relatively little experience in these kind of situations. I think the moves, adding veteran types like Lorenzo Cain or Mike Moustakas, have really helped the clubhouse culture. I think, as I said before, even though they're playing so well, I think this kind of success for any team, even if it was the Dodgers, would kind of catch them off guard just because of how well they're playing and how dominant they are.
And what do you think the perception is of the Dodgers by the Brewers?
By the Brewers, I think I know as a fact from talking to the players that they view them as a very formidable opponent. And it's not going to be an easy road. They look at the rotation there, and they see guys like Clayton Kershaw. And then you also got to factor in a Walker Buehler type, who is an up-and-coming star. They very much respect him. They respect Rich Hill. They respect Kenley Jensen, who is very close with the Brewers' first base coach, actually. So they have a pretty good understanding of Jensen and what he brings to the table. I do believe that they believe they can beat them just because of how well they're playing and how confident they are. But they also know it's not going to be easy at the same time, and they are going to be in for a challenge of a lifetime just because, one, the Dodgers are so good. They have experience in these games. And the Brewers, really, they don't have too much experience as a group in these kind of games.
So with that said, and the lack of experience, what do you think in terms of the Brewers, if they get behind or they lose game one, they lose game two, is this a team that you've seen all season long that can bounce back from adversity? Because we know out here, obviously, the Dodgers can. They can have their ups and downs and then turn it on. But what about the Brewers?
Absolutely. I think from watching them all season, I know they had a very bad stretch right before the All-Star game. And it looked like they were spiraling out of control. But really, they turned that into a dominant stretch where it led them to where they are today. So if they go down 1-0 or 2-0 in the series, I think they will not panic. I think that's been the message that's been relayed by Craig Counsell throughout the entire season, is don't look too far ahead and just play one game at a time. And that can be a strategy that's implemented either if you're up 2-0 in a series or if you're down 2-0 in a series. So they're not going to take the ups too much, or they're not going to be too low when the lows may be at the lowest of lows. So I think no matter what, they won't panic if they're down, and they won't get too high if they end up taking a 2-0 lead here in Milwaukee.
Hey, Robert, you mentioned Counsell. How important and what's the impact been for him on this team, given the fact that he's got two rings himself He's been there. He's done that. He understands the postseason. How much of an impact has he had as a manager on this team?
He's had a huge impact, and the guys really value his opinion. And I know, even though he's had this kind of success in Milwaukee, some of the fans here really don't appreciate the job that he's done, and that kind of catches me off guard. If there's a mistake in a game, there's often calls for Council to be fired, and they don't understand the impact that he has on these guys on a daily basis. He's been faced with a very difficult task in trying to form a lineup every day with all the depth that they have, and I know the Dodgers are facing the same thing with their lineup because of all the depth that they have. I think he's been instrumental in not only getting the lineup to be so effective and maximize their potential on a daily basis, but also trying to get the best out of his players, get the most out of his players, and something that he really deserves a lot of credit for, and the coaches and their coaching staff say the same thing, is he allows those guys to do their jobs. He doesn't try to get too involved. He doesn't try to force himself upon anything. He allows people to do their jobs. He does his job very well, and he's been, without him, I don't think they're in this kind of a situation at all. I think the job that he's done has put him in the discussion for manager of the year. He's very good.
Robert Murray from The Athletic in Milwaukee with us. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, AM 570 LA Sports. Robert, can you just touch on the Brewers starting rotation and what the Dodgers should expect and what you think it'll be?
Yeah, so I think even though the Brewers are not announcing a starter for tomorrow, everybody here in town expects it to be at least Chacin. And on the surface, that doesn't really sound like too terrifying of an opponent or of a matchup for the Dodgers. But he's been their best pitcher this year, and it's really been the birth of his slider, which he's been able to use in multiple forms. He does different arm slots. He does a lot of different things with it, and it's been very effective for him as well. So I would imagine he's probably going to be the opening starter in this series against Clayton Kershaw. And then I would expect the number two starter to be Wade Miley, who has also, like you've seen, been kind of a rebirth this year with his cutter. It's been a very effective pitch. He's been using it to right-handers a lot, and it's put him in a really good spot. He might not be the most terrifying opponent. I would prefer Chacin, but he's also a guy that's been very effective for them as well. And then after that, it gets a little dicey, and that could be where we see one of the initial outfielders going here for the Brewers, like a Brandon Woodruff or Van Jennings or someone like that along those lines. They had Chase Anderson in the rotation, but they took him out just because of the fact he's been allowing too many home runs, and there's a belief that he's been tipping his pitches as well. And another possibility would be Freddie Peralta, who I failed to mention before. He was a starter for them at the beginning of the season, or towards the middle of the season, I should say. But they ended up taking him out just because of a fear of throwing too many innings. But if we're talking from a three- or four-inning basis with odds are being three innings from him, I could definitely see him being in that kind of a role for him. He's been very effective this year. He can strike out a lot of guys. His MLB debut actually came in Colorado, pitched six innings and struck out 13 batters. So he's, even though he's young, he's a very effective option. And they might not be the most appealing options on the surface, but I think the Brewers know that if they can get through four, five, six innings, they'll be in pretty good shape.
All right, well, Robert, thanks for jumping on, and thanks for educating us with a little Brewers 101. We appreciate it. We'll see you at the stadium.
That sounds good to me. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, there goes Robert Murray. And do we feel a little smarter now about the Brewers?
We do. Them being in Milwaukee, we don't see them a whole lot. But they are a very talented team and added some really key components in the offseason. Do you feel like, Fred, that everybody talked about Atlanta, like, well, they're 2 years away, but this happened by surprise and they found themselves, you know, in the playoffs and winning the division. Do you feel the same way about Milwaukee, is that maybe they were a year away and then they found themselves in a pennant race and ended up winning it and now they got home field?
Yeah, what I think is they went out and got those veterans.
Yeah.
You know, Moustakas, Yelich, Kane.
Yeah.
And they probably didn't expect to be this good, but they've got a pretty good team. Although the one thing he said in that interview that struck me, Chacin will pitch, Wade Miley will pitch. Both of those guys the Dodgers can beat. Chacin used to pitch in Colorado. So, you know, they've seen him. Wade Miley's been around. They've seen him as well. And hearing him, actually, I thought, okay, I took a breath and said, oh, this will be fine.
Yeah.
They
but
can
they're
get
not
to
worried.
The starters.
But they're not worried about their starters getting knocked out in the second inning. That's the thing about Milwaukee. You know, whereas most teams are like, we need our guy to go six. We need our guy to go, you know, hopefully he can get us into the seventh. They're not worried about that. They're going to trot out the starter. If he gets to the third or the fourth inning, that's a bonus for them because they know that their bullpen is their strength. And they can trot guys out there to give you two innings, three innings. And then, you know, you throw in Hader at the end and you know, to do seventh and eighth. They are very talented on the back end of that bullpen. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole series plays out.
Yeah, if the Dodgers – so what I took from it is if the Dodgers can get to their starters – and we talked about it at the top of the show, but now we have someone that explained it.
Right.
If the Dodgers get to their starters, let's say they jump out to a 2-3-0 lead. Let's say they do. You know something? The thing that Milwaukee has to remember, they've got to hit against the Dodger pitching.
Correct.
Get the lead – and now you've got to hit against Kershaw or Buehler, who will not struggle in this outing, or Ryu or Hill. You got to hit against those guys. So get the lead. I'll take the Dodger pitching over the Brewers bullpen. Just get the lead.
Yeah, I think that's imperative. You look at it for both teams. I think especially for the Dodgers to get the lead, knowing that, you know, you're going to face a very difficult bullpen, and it's going to be an uphill battle because we've got superior starters, and hopefully the starters can go deep into the game. So then on the flip side of that, Milwaukee's saying, if we get the lead, we got the lead going into the sixth, seventh inning, and we got to turn it over to our bullpen, it's lights out.
Just get the lead.
Yeah.
That's all the Dodgers have to do. Want to win some playoff tickets tomorrow starting at 2? Join Petro somebody live from BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Irvine, 13130 Jamboree Road. Stop by for your chance to win playoff tickets for Monday's game. Tomorrow at BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Irvine, and do not forget, it'll be another chance to register for the Golden Ticket. The Golden Ticket, attend 3 of the 17 BJ's remotes, and you are eligible to win a $500 cash card, a $500 gift card to Barry's Tickets, 50-inch Westinghouse TV, Chargers-Ravens tickets, Dodgers opening day tickets, Clippers tickets, Kings tickets. Be at BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Irvine tomorrow and register for that.
Is it real?
They're real and they're spectacular.
Or fake news?
Fake.
And joining us today for Real or Fake, an old friend.
Hi guys, what's up?
Friend.
I'm back.
Cut her teeth there as an intern, now works down the hall at KFI.
Yeah, I had to be back down the hall by you guys somehow or another.
Yeah, you did. You're back in the building.
I'm back in the building.
Our friend Isabella. Isabella, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's begin.
Yossi, you look happy, Isabella.
I am. I'm very happy to be back. The first time I ever played this, I was nervous. Now I know how this goes.
Now, you're cocky now.
Wow.
You're going to beat me. Is that what you're saying?
No. Jeez. Well, maybe. I mean, I just really know what's going on. Okay. I used to co-write these. Oh. I know how it goes.
Yes, you did.
Okay, so now you would know.
So did you write these?
No.
You sure?
I didn't even look up events.
I know
be
how
like
you and Jason
game.
Work. You try to beat me by, you know, coercing me and cheating from time to time. So.
No, I don't cheat.
Okay.
Yasiel Puig tells David Basse that he will shower him with tequila after the Dodgers win the NLCS. During their second on-camera celebration interview following the Dodgers' victory over the Braves, Yasiel Puig not only predicted that the Dodgers will beat the Brewers in the NLCS, he told our own David Basse that he will pour tequila on his head after they clinch the series. Rodney, is that real or fake?
Well, it's been pretty epic, the visuals of David Basse and Yasiel Puig with the champagne and the beer. I think he's got to take it to the next level with the tequila. I'm going to say real. I'm going to say real.
All right, Isabella.
I'm going to go fake. We went to the World Series last year. He's done beer twice, so I think he has to keep beer until they win the World Series.
You're saying fake?
Fake.
You know what I'm saying? You're right.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff.
You're sure you didn't help with these?
I promise. I didn't help with these at all.
You were very confident in that fake, you said.
Yes, you was.
Never lost.
No.
Oh, no, Jason, no.
LeBron James says his sons, ages 14 and 11, drink wine. LeBron James admitted to reporters yesterday he lets his two sons drink wine with him. The Lakers star says even though they're only 14 and 11, because of their maturity, he allows them to do whatever they want. But he doesn't want his wife taking any blame, telling the audience, "Put it on me, though. Don't put it on Mom. Put it on Dad. Put it on Dad." Does Dad let the boys drink wine, Isabella? Is that real or fake?
I'm going to go real. I worked in sports radio, so I may listen to sports radio on the way here, and I may have heard this story, so I'm going to go real.
Okay, well, if in fact you did hear the story, then you've just told Rodney.
Or I'm lying. I'm trying to psych him out.
Okay, that was really bad.
Yeah, probably.
No, you're right. I saw it, too. Yeah. I just saw it on the TV. Never lost. Too big a story.
I always lose.
Wow. Jesus, that was horrible.
I always lose.
Diana Olin. Oh, my goodness.
Dodger fan gets Dodgers World Champ 2018 tattoo on his scalp. Ralph Rojas of Highland Park got a tattoo that reads LA Dodgers 2018 World Champs on his bald scalp. Rojas posted pictures of the tattoo artist doing it and the final result on his social media. Did Ralph get the tattoo, Rodney? Is that real or fake?
Ralph did get the tattoo. Absolutely real.
Saying it's real. Isabella?
I'll go real, too. I could totally see a Dodger fan doing that.
Could you?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff.
Never lost.
I said that with confidence. That's why
I thought
that's
it was
why
real.
She, yeah. That's exactly what you did.
You know, I've met Dodger fans who are just so certain.
I know. Never lost. Maybe World, but not, you know, put the date on it. You just put World Series, but maybe not the date, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm not confident, so.
All right, well, you still got the lead.
Yes.
By one. Drake and LeBron talk about making a graceful exit in the new episode of HBO's The Shop. In the new episode of The Shop, LeBron James' show on HBO, artist Drake expresses his greatest fear as a powerhouse in the entertainment business is how to exit gracefully and not overstay his welcome. LeBron replies by saying, "What helps with the gracefully bowing out is having people around you that were there with you from day one, that seen you from the beginning. You can't have mother effers around you who can't keep it honest with you and keep it real with you." Isabella, is that real or fake?
I'm going to go with real. Drake's the homie. LeBron probably goes to him for advice. They're probably good friends. So I'm going to go with that's real.
Okay, Rodney, she says it's real.
Yeah, I'm going to go real too. You gotta keep the people around you that's going to keep it real for you. So I agree with that. I'm going real. It's real, boy.
Never lost. It's real, boy. All right. It's real. So Rodney.
Never lost.
I'm down one.
With two to go.
Okay.
Derek Lewis's biggest problem with Daniel Cormier is about Popeye's chicken. UFC 230's main event will be heavyweight champ Daniel Cormier against Derek Lewis on November 3rd. In recent months, it was revealed that Lewis has a specific problem with Cormier, and it has nothing to do with him as a fighter. Lewis said his biggest problem with Cormier is that he disrespected Popeye's chicken in a commercial. Rodney, is that real or fake?
Wow. Wait, so Cormier disrespected Popeye's chicken?
Yes.
Daniel Cormier disrespecting Popeye's chicken.
Well, them's fighting words.
Them fighting words. How dare you? How dare you? I'm going real. Yeah, that's real.
You're saying real. Isabella.
I'm going to go fake.
Oh! You're going fake?
Yeah, I'm going to go fake.
Okay.
What's your issue with Daniel?
He disrespected Popeye's chicken on a commercial for years ago. Ha ha!
Don't you disrespect Popeye's chicken, boy.
All right, boy, you know what? That one could have won it for you.
I know. It's okay. We like to... Rodney plays to win.
Right.
So, this is it.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to win. So I'm going to get the right answer, which means he has to play the win, which is to lose.
I always lose.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, this is it.
Look at you, Isabella, coming back all confident.
I'm ready.
All right.
Taylor Swift throws shade at Kanye West in AMA acceptance speech. Taylor Swift won the award for Artist of the Year at the American Music Awards last night. During her acceptance speech, she encouraged her fans to vote in the midterm elections. She added, "And I will attempt to forgive Kanye for his choice to side with our president." Let me do that again. I left out a word. "And I will attempt to forgive Kanye for his choice to side with our president." Did Taylor Swift say that, Isabella? Is it real or fake?
I think it's very known that I'm a very big Taylor Swift fan, so I'm going to go with fake, because I definitely watched that acceptance speech, and I Noah was set, but Rodney plays to win.
I do so. Play to win, but I also don't play to lose either. And
you did it again, Isabella.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? Because she did say she encouraged everyone to go out and vote, but she did not go the extra mile and diss Kanye on that.
She doesn't have to diss Kanye.
No, Kanye disses himself.
Exactly.
Fake. Both fake. Both right.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff.
Oh!
At least we tied.
We tied. It's like
no one lost this time.
It's like I got to kiss you on the cheek because you're like my sister.
Okay.
As you roll your eyes.
I'm like, okay. Thank you guys for having me. That was fun.
My baby sister.
You're right.
Yeah.
Well, Isabella, thank you. Thank you for coming in today. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you guys, too. Thank you.
Nice to see you. Come by and say hello more often.
Yeah,
you're down the hall.
I'll be down the hall. I'll be by more often.
What's taking you so long?
Well, I'm working Tim Conway right now, so actually evenings, not lunchtime.
Oh.
Yeah, but I came early just for you guys today.
We appreciate that.
We do.
All right.
Good to see you.
Thanks,
nice
Isabella.
Bye.
When we come back, what are the similarities between Kobe Bryant and LeBron James? Are there any? Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. All right, next hour, Ned Colletti will join us. We'll get more into the Dodgers. We'll get his take on it. And the Lakers take on the Warriors tonight. Bill Oram will join us next hour as well. Do you find any similarities between LeBron James and Kobe Bryant? Are they, in essence, the same person? Or, Rodney, do you think they're very different?
In what way? I think they're different in personalities in a lot of different ways. Just who they are, you know, and I'm not basing this on the court. Both on the court are in the athletic realm are very fierce competitors and want to win and demand a lot of themselves and demand a lot of, you know, their teammates. But, you know, and what they stand for and what they do off the court, I think LeBron is a little bit more active, a lot more active, I should say, when it comes to being aware of social issues and things like that. And being willing to speak out about it and being public about, you know, his endeavors in terms of the community, his schools that he's opening and, you know, affecting lives of kids and families. I think LeBron has been very, very, you know, active and public about that. And we're still not sure exactly some of the things that Kobe is doing off the court other than, you know, doing some of the entertainment stuff in the movies and things that he's doing.
But you would agree on the court, they're somewhat similar. They are focused. They're driven. They want to win. They basically take no prisoners. And they have a great deal of demand for those around them. Fair?
Oh, yeah.
So Kevin Love was asked about playing with LeBron James. And really the question was, can the Lakers attract a superstar to play with LeBron? Look at the people that he was with that chose not to. Kyrie Irving didn't want to be there. Paul George, for whatever reason, didn't take a meeting with the Lakers. Even Jimmy Butler did not have the Lakers on his wish list. And I'm wondering, Rodney, as a guy that played, if the objective is to win championships. Now, when you played with Kobe, you knew how demanding he was, and it rubbed some people the wrong way. But the results could not be argued. They were champions because of him. LeBron's teams have been champions because of him. Wouldn't you want to be in an environment where you had the chance to be a champion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not buying this whole thing that, you know, stars don't want to play with LeBron. I'm not buying that. Kevin Love went to Cleveland to go play with LeBron. And, yeah, you can take an interview and you can hear it out of context, and then you can take the interview he did before, how LeBron is the one that called him when he was going through his, you know, some of his depression issues and things like that, and was the number one person that he leaned on. But we can take, you know, snippets from every interview and say, oh, no one wants to play with LeBron or this is that, or what Paul George's motivation was not to even take a meeting with the Lakers. Was it the Lakers? Was it the stage? Maybe it says more about Paul George than it does about LeBron. So I'm not buying that whole thing that nobody wants to play with LeBron. I think, you know, Kyrie saw, and we don't know the details of Kyrie leaving Cleveland, but I think he felt, look, you know, LeBron is leaving. He's not going to stay here and be here long term, and I'm going to be the one left with the bag and have to try to resurrect this franchise or keep this franchise going when he's gone. and I'm going to get out when I can, and this is my opportunity to get out. And so I think that's a whole different dynamic, but I'm not buying into the, oh, that's not, nobody wants to play with LeBron.
Yeah, because Kevin Love's point is he's very demanding. Yeah, but to win, don't you have to be demanding? And I guess in sports, there's always...
But that's not a criticism.
No, I don't
think
it is either.
People take it as a criticism. You know, they looked at it and said, oh, he's very demanding. Oh, that's why the people don't want to play with LeBron because he's so demanding. No, everybody, you know, Chris Paul is demanding. James Harden's demanding. Westbrook is demanding. Every big-time player is demanding.
Every champion, right?
Absolutely. They're all demanding. And the people that play with them are demanding of themselves as well. So it's not just the superstars, but everybody's demanding.
Is it in sports? It's the ultimate alpha, and there's one bigger alpha in the room than everybody else. I mean, in professional sports, everybody got there because they're the best at what they do at a certain period of time in their life. But more often than not, and you played, you know, there's one guy, the guy, and that guy kind of sets the tone for everybody else. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely there is a alpha dog in every situation. There is that guy. And it's up to that guy to be able to coexist with the other stars on the team. It's not always an easy task because the other stars in the team, like you said, you know, everybody was a superstar in high school and in college to get to the next level. You were a star. And so to relinquish that role when you go to the top or be on a team where there's a star that's bigger than yours, it's not always easy to take for an individual. And so it's more about the individuals that are possibly going to a team with a star or with an alpha dog than it is about the alpha dog himself.
And we'll find out next year which alpha wants to come to play with the Lakers. They'll have the cap space. There is money available. They can go out and sign a big-name, top-notch player. As we sit here right now, and you believe it might be Kevin Durant, but let's say it's not Kevin Durant.
Yep.
Do they get a big name? Is somebody going to come and join LeBron?
Yeah. Without a doubt. 100%. There will be another big-time free agent that comes to the Lakers next year. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, or even question in my mind that there will be somebody big-time that will come to the Lakers.
All right. Lakers play Golden State tonight. It'll be Lonzo's first time on the court with LeBron James. Bill Orem, who is with the Lakers every day, has the most up-to-date, up-to-the-minute information. He'll join us next. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. Kevin, what's coming up at 1:30?
Well, Fred, we know how great of a football program Alabama is, but apparently...
It is.
Well, they've won a lot recently. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, apparently they're flawed and they aren't perfect, Rodney.
They cheat like everybody else.
We'll talk about that. I don't know if it's about cheating, but we'll get into...
Like everybody else?
Yeah.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So we'll talk about them coming up in the in Good Call, Bad Call.
You're not suggesting other people cheat.
No, I'm not that naive.
Never.
No, you would never do that. No, I'm naive in a lot of ways, but you're not suggesting that.
No.
Okay, so the Lakers take on the Warriors tonight. It's LeBron's first opportunity to face the Warriors since the NBA Finals. And joining us to discuss that, our man that's plugged in all over it, there every single day, from The Athletic, Bill Orem, our insider. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great, thank you. Okay, so LeBron takes on the Warriors for the first time since the Finals. It's a preseason game. What does it mean and does it matter?
I think it's a little bit of yes and a little bit of no, but it's a different feeling, obviously, to see LeBron James playing against this team he's encountered in the finals the last 4 years, but playing for a different team and for it to be a division rival in the Lakers. LeBron has built up such tension with these Warriors, Klay Thompson and Steph and Draymond Green especially, that you expect there to be some kind of fireworks. But especially in a preseason game, I think it's going to be a pretty deflated experience, and I think we're going to start seeing it a little bit more as we get into the regular season when they play on Christmas and they play on Martin Luther King Day, really marquee games for the league where they're still trying to market the LeBron versus the Warriors matchup. But, you know, Steve Kerr did say, I mean, it's special for him as an LA guy to see LeBron in a Lakers jersey, and there's going to be a lot of that fire that you've seen just because there is so much familiarity on both sides, and there's been so much at stake when they've played before. But now, the strange thing is if you look at how this is set up, the Warriors now have to play the Lakers four times in the regular season before they even get to the playoffs. Now, I wouldn't say that the Warriors' path to a championship goes through the Lakers. I think that's very much the other way around. But whereas before, you know, LeBron was sort of this afterthought over in the Eastern Conference, now they're going to see him six times counting the preseason before they even get to the playoffs, where there could perhaps be another matchup.
Hey, do you Klay Thompson said it's good for LeBron to be in a Laker uniform, and the rivalry can kind of get enhanced with the Lakers. Do you think the rest of the Warriors feel that way, and you think this is good for the NBA in terms of this being a good thing because the Warriors are the champs, and now LeBron is in the West playing for the Lakers?
Yeah, I think anytime you have your best player facing off against the best team, it's going to be good for the league. It's good for the league that LeBron is playing in a media market like Los Angeles. It's good for the league that he's in the same division as the Warriors, and they're going to face each other so many times. All those games are going to be on national TV. They're all going to be big, big primetime events. So it is good for the league. I think by the time we got to the end of last season, there was a lot of Cavs-Warriors fatigue, four straight finals that had never happened before, where you saw the same matchup in four straight finals. So now you can keep that rivalry sort of alive, but also give it a fresh tone of paint, and it looks totally different. But it was funny today. LeBron was asked about the rivalry with the Warriors, and he just kind of smirked and said, "I don't know anything about it." So he's definitely turned the page from kind of the heated past of Cavs and Warriors.
Bill Oram from The Athletic, our insider on AM 570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, Lakers and Warriors tonight. The other subplot in this, we'll get to see Lonzo Ball play. And LeBron James has said glowing things about Lonzo recently. As you look at it, what do you expect from Lonzo?
Well, I would expect him to be a little bit rusty. He said today, we asked him about his knee, and he said that he was hadn't felt any pain in that knee in more than 2 weeks, which is more or less when he got up to full speed in practice and started scrimmaging. So I think he's healthy. But this is a guy who hasn't played in 6.5 months. He hasn't been in an NBA game, preseason or not, since the end of March. So I think there's going to be some bumps in the road. I wouldn't expect him to come in and look great right away. But that's the reason the Lakers held him out, was to give him as much of a runway as possible so he would so he wouldn't get off to that kind of slow start that invites the criticisms and brings out the haters who have really found Lonzo Ball to be a very easy target in the year he's been in the NBA. So I think he's going to look okay. I think people are going to be surprised at how big he is physically. There have been videos and photos from practice, but it's going to look different when you see him against other NBA guys. He is much bigger in the shoulders. He said he's stronger, telling us this week that he is going to be better finishing through contact. Like, he's going to be more aggressive in the lane. And for as much as we've talked about his three-point shot, which obviously is still something to pay very close attention to, what he did when he got into the lane last year was just as big of a problem, because he would get in and there'd be that big tree there at the basket. And Lonzo wasn't looking for his own opportunity. He was always looking to dump it off, make that extra high degree of difficulty pass, led to a lot of turnovers, and ultimately led to him not being that much of an offensive threat. So as good as his rookie season was in so many ways, 10 points a game, 7 rebounds a game, 7 assists every night, there are a lot of things offensively that need to evolve and need to catch up with the rest of his game. And tonight is going to be the first look to see if he was able to make strides in those areas. We know he missed almost the entire summer with arthroscopic knee surgery. So any real changes he's made probably are going to have to have happened in training camp, which has only been 2 weeks, and kind of mentally and based on film study. So I think it's reasonable to think that Lonzo is going to need a little bit of time to acclimate, but seeing him with LeBron James for the first time is going to be exciting. That's the pairing everybody's been excited to see. Neither of those guys is probably going to play more than 20 minutes tonight. Lonzo's going to come off the bench. LeBron's going to start. So it remains to be seen how much time they're actually going to be on the floor together, but you will see it at some point tonight. And that's going to be an important one to watch going forward.
Hey, before we let you go, because you're down there every day, how does Lonzo's shot look? He tweaked it, right?
He's changed a little bit. And I've asked him about this repeatedly, and he has said that it's not so much an adjustment to his shot as it is a byproduct of him getting stronger. But if you look very closely at his shot, he's not bringing it so far to the left when he brings it up. He's bringing it up more straight. He still shoots it from the left side, but it's not this big looping windup that it used to be. So I think that's a little bit of an adjustment. And we saw a piece of a scrimmage last week where he was out there playing 4-on-4, and he looked good physically, and he was just launching three. I don't know if he was trying to get comfortable with the transition three or what exactly his motives were, but he was just launching them in the scrimmage, and they still weren't going in. So the question of the adjustment to the form is an important one, but the bottom line is going to be, are they going in? We saw him shoot in the teens last year for the first several months of the season, and he was off to a historically poor shooting start. It came up a little bit, then he ended up around 30% at the end of the year. But for him to be a real threat and for him to really be the point guard of the future for this franchise, that needs to keep climbing upward more towards the mid-30s.
All right, Bill. Well, thanks for jumping on. Thanks for the information. It'll be interesting tonight, to say the least, and we'll check with you again and see how it all played out.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks, Rodney. We'll talk soon.
Okay, there he is, Bill Orme. He's down there every day, Rodney. Yeah.
Hanging out in Vegas. Put $100 on black for me, Bill. I know it's preseason and everybody's like, and the hype has been around LeBron and the Lakers and all of that. But I think this is a little bit more than a preseason game. The fact that they are playing the Warriors, the fact that LeBron has played the Warriors in the last three finals. So there's a little extra, I think, going into this. I know it's not indicative to what's going to happen throughout the season, but there's got to be a little level of anticipation, more so than just a regular preseason game.
All right, so we will find out about that. And when we come back, we'll find out more about the Dodgers and Brewers. Our good buddy Ned Colletti will join us. We'll set it up when he gets back. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, AM 570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, AM 570 LA Sports. Now it's time for somebody to get a little bit richer. Let's put a grand in your hand.
Now is the time.
Oh, my God.
Grab your phone, win $1,000. Text the keyword money to 200-200. That's money to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry, plus iHeartRadio info. Standard message and data rates apply.
Good luck.
All right, and remember, if that phone rings after you have texted, you got to answer the phone. You've got to answer the phone. That's the only way we can put a grand in your hand. Unknown number, block number, whatever number. If you text in and then your phone rings, answer the phone for $1,000. So the Dodgers have a workout at the stadium today, Rodney. Get started about 3:45. Dave Roberts, I think, will speak to the media then 5 o'clock they're on the field till about 6:30. Tomorrow they're off to Milwaukee. So they get a day in here, fly to Milwaukee tomorrow. And joining us now, our man that sat in the big chair, knows all, sees all. It's our dear friend, Ned Colletti. Ned, thanks for jumping on.
My pleasure. Exciting times, gentlemen.
Yeah, exciting times. You know, I was in the locker room with the Dodgers after the game, and, you know, everybody said, hey, we were calm all the way through this thing. The regular season, the postseason, we expected to be here. And I said, well, that's good for you. I don't think any of the fans felt that way.
We know you didn't feel that.
No,
way,
I didn't.
They know what they're talking about. They know who they are.
Well, I speak for the people, Ned. But, Ned, what is it about this team, as a guy that sat in the chair, what is it about this team that kept them so even-keeled and so focused throughout the entire process?
Well, they know what they're doing, and the experience factor is huge. The confidence factor is also huge. Ronnie, you know, athletes, no matter who you are, you go through some spells of confidence where it could get a little bit thinner than at other times. But this group, whenever it maybe did get just a touch thin, they rally. They have enough people there to rally everybody that it just continues to fortify itself. I think from a baseball standpoint, I think when you watch them, it all comes to pitching to me. When you watch them pitch, they can make a pitch. When you watch the other teams hit, They venture out of the strike zone all the time. You saw Atlanta, good young team, all that. But you saw Rich Hill struggle with his command once in a while, a couple of calls went the other way against him. But he could throw a 2-0 pitch out of the zone, and Atlanta would offer at it and pop it up. You never see the Dodgers do that. So it's really the Dodgers hitting versus pitching that's inferior, to my opinion. and Dodgers pitching, which is superior to the thought process of the other hitters. I think that's going to continue on for another 3 weeks.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right about the clubhouse, is that when you're in that clubhouse, and these guys are closer than anybody outside looking in, but inside that clubhouse, you know that locker room, and you know that, hey, I got this guy next to me. I got this guy next to me. I got this guy on my team. And you feel good about it. So that keeps you calm, knowing that, you know, Justin Turner can look over and go, I got Bellinger. I got Machado. I got Dozier here. I got Freeze on my team. I got Grandal. I got Kershaw. Yep. You know, it's like a comfort blanket with everybody within that clubhouse, no matter what people are saying outside of it. That being said, Ned, I just want to ask you, because there's been a lot of talk about Manny Machado and, he's got to have that signature moment. Obviously came up big in the last game, hitting a double and then hitting a big 3-run home run. Do you think he feels that, or does he have to prove anything else other than just going out and playing and being Manny?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to say the latter. We know that in the way the mind works, sometimes it's tough just to sit back and play and let your talent take care of it. And I think there is a little bit of pressure on Manny, a free agent coming up. He's on the biggest stage he's ever been on. He's got a chance to show the world how good he is. So I think there might be a little bit extra there too. But I think this guy's been I know he hasn't hit a lot or hit as much as people expect. Sometimes people expect you never to make an out. This man's come up clutch. The defense has been excellent. The arm is superior. The thought process is good. I think he's in a really good spot. And the signature moment, you know, I don't know what a signature moment, whether you have to have that to win a championship. I think the goal here is to win a championship. Signature moments, the world will put signature moments in people's way, and some of them will achieve, quote, a signature moment. To me, a signature moment is holding that trophy and going down whatever street it'll be in a big parade. That, to me, is a signature moment.
Ned Coletti, our insider, with us, AM570 LA Sports, Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete. So Clayton Kershaw will get the start against the Brewers. Ryu started game one of the NLDS. Much was made of the fact, Ned, that, well, Kershaw wasn't starting game one. Now, is this the way it's supposed to be? Did they make this move because of his performance against Atlanta?
Performance was spectacular, and I think that it's tough to predict down the road when you're putting together lineups or pitching rotations and things like that. I thought it was almost genius that they did what they did. I think it added a little bit of edge to Clayton to pitch game two and not game one. I think it also put immense pressure on Atlanta, a young team. They don't need any more pressure than they've already got. They wonder if they're going to win. The Dodgers know they can win, as Ronnie could probably attest to. That's a great advantage. But I think when you start Ryu in game one in a best of five, you're Atlanta, you've got to win that game because you've got Kershaw and Buehler coming after that. And I know Walker had a tough inning and all that. But as another team, as an opponent, you see Ryu, you think this might be our chance. And then he pitches as great as he does. I think now it's different in a seven-game series. I think you have to lay it out because you may have a starting pitcher go three games if the series does go seven. And that you'd want Clayton Kershaw to be that guy. Buehler's at a pitch, a innings point right now that he has not been at in this particular environment. So, you know, you're going to watch that a little bit. But I do think that Clayton Kershaw is the right guy to start game one. And I think as you lay out your rotation, it makes all the sense in the world. And it also puts pressure on Milwaukee because they know, look, this guy knows how to pitch. He's always reinventing himself. He's done it this year. He's a different pitcher this year than he was a year ago, than he was 3 years ago. And I think that puts the pressure on Milwaukee, and that's a good thing.
Hey, Ned, I thought even though they lost game three, and you mentioned Walker having to struggle in the inning in the second, but he settled down after that. But getting down 5-0, we've seen the Dodgers, when they get down early, it's kind of been a wrap. It's been over. They've lost that game. But to see them fight back, tie it up, have a chance to win that game, to me, it spoke volumes because it was different. And maybe it's the postseason. Maybe it's the guys coming around feeling, Chris Taylor coming around, you know, getting back into the groove. To me, that was a big positive sign for the Dodgers going forward. What say you?
Absolutely. I think whenever you do fight back in a situation, and anytime you have adversity, and there's all sorts of adversity in life, a lot more serious than being down 5 to nothing in a baseball game. But that's what they were doing. That's what they were playing. And when you do fight back from that, it tells yourself, it tells your own team, it refreshes and reconfirms your conviction to how good you are. And it also tells the other teams, Milwaukee was there scouting. They saw the game. They watched it on TV. If they didn't see it, they have scouts, you know, besides the scouts there. They know that this team has got that in them. And I think that is a great characteristic this time of year, because there's a chance they're going to fall behind at some point in time. But you know what? It doesn't mean the same as if Atlanta fell behind 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean the same. It's a different characteristic. It's a different component to a championship group. This team's got it. They've had it. They've been waiting since November 1st last year to get to this part of the calendar. It's a long time to wait. Little ups and downs here and there. But when you think about, as you evaluate last season, all of us, we go, what a great year. But you know what? They lost Game 7. They feel the same way. What a great year, 104 wins. But you know what? We lost Game 7. We got to get back to it. And now we are going to tighten it up just a little bit more. We're going to turn everything up we got just another notch and not let anybody take it away from us. And I think that's the mindset. I think Justin Turner exemplifies it on one side and Kenley and Clayton on the other. And that's not to diminish anybody else's role here. I think those three have been with this organization for such a long time, and they lead. I don't know. Whenever I see JT come to bat, I think something good's going to happen. And I think that there's a confidence that those types of players exude, that those guys that are trying to get to that point because maybe they're young in the game or they're young with this organization, they see that and they say, we got it. We're all together. Everybody's got each other's back. David Freese, another guy, just like that, newcomer to this organization. But when you see him come up, you know the man means business. You know he ain't afraid of the moment. He's got an LCS MVP, a World Series MVP in his hometown, no less. That's the makings of a championship club, I'm telling you.
All right, Ned, we'll appreciate the insight. Before we let you go quickly, what can you tell us about Milwaukee? We know they've got a great bullpen. What should concern the Dodgers?
Well, I think that the games will be decided by the early part of the game. I think the first 4 or 5 innings, Milwaukee's got a good offensive club. They're all fired up. They got the MVP in Yelich. They're playing an extra game at home. You know that place can get loud. It's got the rough on it. It's maybe the loudest ballpark in baseball when you've got the situation that they've got. But I think they're going to need leads early in games in order to beat the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers, if the Dodgers can get off to an early lead, Milwaukee's starting pitching is not the Dodgers' starting pitching. I think the game gets decided in the first 4 or 5 innings, almost all the way through. And then you got the Milwaukee bullpen. That has got a great reputation. But they have yet to pitch when the lights are going to be as hot as they're going to be now. So I do think that the first part of the game will be very interesting, very telling. The Dodgers get leads. I think Milwaukee struggles to come back. Milwaukee gets leads. I think it'll be a fair fight to the end.
All right, Ned. Well, thanks for the insight. And here we go. We'll chat again soon.
Take it easy there. Rest assured, it's going to be exciting now. Ronnie, try and keep them calm.
I'm trying, Ned. I'm trying, man.
All right. See you guys.
See you, Ned. All right. Yeah, now I feel much more confident after we heard from our friend from Milwaukee in hour number one, Robert
Murray. The
pads
are down. The pads are down now.
Yeah, well, I'm confident now. I know that the Dodgers can get to Milwaukee starting pitching. And again, once they do that and they've got the lead, I don't care what their bullpen does. Milwaukee still got to hit against the Dodger pitching.
That's true. And the Dodgers bullpen has been pretty good themselves.
Yeah, so. I like the Dodgers. I'm not saying they're going to sweep.
Don't say that, Fred. No. Don't say it.
No, because you'll hold me to it.
Don't say it.
I do like the Dodgers in the series. Hey, you want to win playoff tickets? Tomorrow starting at 2, join Petros and Money live from BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Irvine. 13130 Jamboree Road. Stop by for your chance to win playoff tickets for the Monday game. That's tomorrow. BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse in Irvine.
It's time for good call.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Bad call.
I may have to hang up on him.
Mas Azul, the Dodgers clubhouse store at Universal City Walk, has official Dodgers playoff gear. You got to rock it. The fever has run amok in the Ciudad with the Dodgers, including incredible array of options for you. Custom hats, jerseys, and so much more. The Dodgers Clubhouse Store, it's the official team store of AM 570 LA Sports. Oh, he is blossoming. The Red Samurai is going
to... The Red Lotus.
More damage
did
done.
Did you give him the Red Lotus?
You know...
Vic, did you give him the Red Lotus?
I gave him Red Samurai. Lives through death, shows no fear, ultimate self-sacrifice.
Right on.
His
right
postseason
on.
Stats, you guys know the
oh,
stats.
Yeah. He's a bad
third
man.
Greatest postseason bad hitter man. Behind Babe Ruth and
yeah.
Lou Gehrig.
Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth,
and Justin Turner.
Justin Turner. Unbelievable.
It's just insane. Okay, Vic.
Come on now. Speaking of the Dodgers, good call or bad call for the Dodgers or the Angels to pursue Zach Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt this offseason. Now, Bob Nightingale tweeted just a couple of hours ago saying that the D-backs are looking to just start everything over, go scorched earth, tear it down, build back up from the bottom up, and apparently both Zach Greinke, former Angel and Dodger, as well as Paul Goldschmidt, their star first baseman, could both be on the trade block and can be had this upcoming offseason. Could be tougher for the Dodgers because they're in division. Of course, the Angels trying to find a way to keep Mike Trout there, bring in more reinforcements, can possibly try to convince him to be able to stay and sign an extension. Would it be a good call or a bad call for the Angels or the Dodgers to pursue Zach Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt this offseason, Fred?
Well, before, I think there's a couple of things you have to consider. Okay. First, how long are they signed? How much money do they make?
I can tell you that Greinke's making $30 million for the next couple of seasons.
Okay, and we don't know Goldschmidt.
No.
But Goldschmidt will make an awful lot of money.
Yes.
I think it makes complete sense. It's a good call for the Angels.
Okay.
Absolutely. Either one of them. That works. I like Goldschmidt, really, for the Dodgers, but I don't know, you know, if he's cost-effective. When it comes right down to it, because they're loaded, they've got guys everywhere. It doesn't hurt to add a guy like Goldschmidt. I just don't know if he fits into the overall business model. But for the Angels, I'd say go for it.
What do you say, Rod?
Yeah, I like it for the Angels. Actually, both these guys, Greinke, you know, we thought he was on the real downside, but he actually had a pretty good year. And Goldie is one of the best hitters in baseball, has been for the last 5 years. So it's a good thing for the Dodgers. For the Angels, but for the Dodgers, I don't know about Greinke, but Goldschmidt I think would be a pretty good add. I mean, anytime you could add a guy like that with that kind of bat, just think about JD Martinez going to Boston and what he's done for that club, and what he did for the Diamondbacks when he was there. So big bats in the lineup, I don't think you could ever go wrong. But good call for the Angels, yeah, for sure.
What do you say, Vic?
Greinke, no for the Dodgers. Okay. Goldie, yes. He's a Dodger killer for oh so many years. As Vin Scully branded him, and he's destroyed the Dodgers. Not this year so much, Goldie, but let's face it, you want to add quality, but the attitude of Zach Greinke, he's such a mercenary. Remember, the Dodgers turned down that sixth year. That's how Arizona was able to sign him, because the Dodgers wouldn't give him that 6 year. He's a total mercenary. He doesn't fit into the collective, the selflessness of the Dodger ball club, the self-sacrifice. That's not Greinke's deal. But for the Angels, they just need more talent. If you want to keep Mike Trout, you got to put more talent around Trouty, man, because Trout needs more ball players around him. It's not working. You know, Socha's gone. You've got to get more talent around Trouty if you want to keep Mike in an Angel uniform. But again, it is the business model, Fred. If I'm the Dodgers, I still want to improve, and they improve every year in the offseason. This is a better team this year than it was last year on the road to the World Series, y'all.
All right, guys. Good call or bad call from Mike Clevenger to go on a Twitter rant against an MLB Network reporter. Now, Mike Clevenger, pitcher for the Cleveland Indians, had some comments earlier this season after they played the Houston Astros in a regular season series, and he said, quote, "We have what they have. They're not that special. We're right there with them." So someone on Twitter, because we know Twitter is undefeated, made a video with those comments, followed by Simon and Garfunkel's mute sound, the sound of silence. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Playing highlights of the Astros just destroying the Indians in 3 games in the ALDS. Now, that video was retweeted by Robert Flores, a reporter for MLB Network.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So he basically, Clevenger went on Twitter and said that Flores is, quote, a cockroach, a teenage girl, an idiot,
ooh,
an unprofessional child,
uh-oh,
and quote, soft as pudding.
Ooh.
Now, apparently Flores got in contact with him. They both got on the phone and they hashed it out. He did eventually delete the tweets, but of course it was screen grabbed and saved for all of time by Deadspin and other websites. Was it a good call or a bad call for Mike Clevenger to go off on Robert Flores for tweeting out that video that was created on Twitter, Rodney?
It's a good call for him to go after him. Yeah, I think so. You know, Flores is a MLB guy. You know, you can't get involved in that kind of stuff. And then expect to go and interact with players going forward. Leave that for the Twitter sphere and those, you know, the trolls that want to do that. But you can't be a troll if you're Robert Flores. You can't do that.
What do you say, Fred?
Yeah, I think it's a good call I went after him. I think it's a terrible call if Flores did it.
Okay.
What are you thinking? You're employed by Major League Baseball. You're not some fan. You're not some guy sitting in the basement creating little videos. You work for Major League Baseball.
Now, again, he didn't make the video. He just retweeted.
Yeah, but he's still retweeted. Might as well.
You got to be above that. You got to know what your role is. You got to know what you're doing. You're a representative of Major League Baseball. Yeah. That's who you work for. And to do that is just a really bad decision on his part.
What do you say, Vic?
Just to reiterate, was it a bad call by Clevenger to go after Flores?
Correct. That's the question.
I say it's a bad call. Because you must not let your emotions get total control of you. You were humiliated by the Astros. Cleveland looked horrific in the sweep. You got to just, you know, suck it up, Clevenger, and not attack, you know, people on Twitter at that point. You got to take 7 deep breaths. You know, Flores was just, you know, tweeting out, trying to get some, you know, some tumultuous tweets going, and he did. I love the Simon and Garfunkel Sounds of Silence. It's a tremendous creative way to say that the Cleveland Indians are slipping into darkness. Have a little Slipping Into Darkness by War. That's not bad either.
Oh, I love that.
Slipping Into Darkness.
Good call. That's a good call.
You know,
call,
love dude. Simon and Garfunkel. You know, Simon, you know, they went to my high school in Forest Hills in Queens. But anyway.
Anybody else go to your high school?
Wow,
we should know
did
about?
Not know that.
The thing. Ramones. Joey Ramone. I went to school with Joey Ramone. The great Joey Ramone.
The Ramones?
God bless the Ramones. And, Leslie West from Mountain, Mississippi Sleigh Ride. Great guitarist. Big El Gordo, Leslie West from Mountain. Walter Fagan from Steely Dan was in the neighborhood. I don't think he went to high school. I think he just played the guitar.
It worked for him.
Yeah. Steely Dan, good band.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Love Steely Dan.
Still rocking after all these years.
Still rocking. They're touring. They're gigging well right now, Steely Dan.
Bless Walter. We lost Walter last year, but absolutely great, great band. Seminal band. Anyway.
Well, yeah.
Good call by Clevenger.
Love Steely Dan.
Right?
Love him.
Steely Dan, man.
I got him in my playlist.
Do you?
Yes.
It's in your workout mix there, right?
Well, I would say workout mix. Who knew? I got him in my playlist.
All right. Works for me.
Whatever. Ricky, don't lose my number.
Oh. Good call or bad call for Alabama to be upset about their quote-unquote struggling defense? We know Alabama's number one in the country and just rolling people off the field left and right. Now, their most recent victory against Arkansas last weekend, they won 65-31. But apparently Nick Saban wasn't happy with the way the defense performed because they happened to give up 31 points, even though they damn near won by 30.
Yeah.
Nick said, I would appreciate it if you guys would look at some of the things we don't do so well and write about that so I can show it to the players and say, look here, man, here's something you can do better. Basically trying to invent reasons, ways for them to motivate players because they're just running players off the field at this point in time, or running other teams off the field, I should say. And by the way, their struggling defense, 11th in the country in scoring, 28th in yards allowed, and 49th in yards allowed per game. I don't know where I come from. That's pretty damn decent, but what do I know? Good call or bad call for Alabama to be upset about their struggling defense, Fred?
It's a good call.
Okay.
I get it. It doesn't matter how many points you beat somebody by. You know, you're really playing against yourself if you're Alabama. You're challenging yourself every week. He wants perfection. He wants them to be better. And if he's saying, even though we won 61-35 or 65-31, whatever it was, we still gave up 31 points. Let's button that up. Good call.
Okay. What do you say, Rod?
It's a good call. They got to find their motivation. You know what I mean? You know, they're rolling through people. So he doesn't want the heads to get too big. He's got to find some fault. So, yeah, it's a good call for them to try to, hey, let's signal out the defense. The defense has not played that well. You know, we got work to do. You don't want to think that the kids, and they're just, you know, so confident, so cocky that they can beat anybody at any time. There's some flaws in that Alabama team, especially on defense. How about this?
Yeah.
My playlist. Yeah, that's my playlist.
This is Steely Dan.
Yeah, there it is.
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
Got me some Steely Dan going, baby.
That's pretty good. I like that, right?
Yeah.
Right? I'll mix it in there. What do you say about Bama there, Vic?
I'm sick and tired of Savings Act.
Okay.
Actually picked up your phone.
Sick and tired of Savings Act. You know, Arkansas scores 31 points and he's bitching about his defense. You know, give the kid some love. If you want to stay undefeated, you can't just make them nuts every week. They're playing great football. It's them and the rest of the country in terms of talent. And yet, you sink your verbal toxicity into the kids. I'm sick and tired of his acting, Bama. Sweet home Alabama, not for me, man. No sweet home Alabama
you're
for
tired,
me.
Vic.
Is there any playlist with Lynyrd Skynyrd? You got some Lynyrd Skynyrd?
I got some Skynyrd in there, too. Skynyrd? Yeah. What song is it that you want to hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Freebird. Come on. I know Skynyrd.
Freebird.
Good call or bad call to say the road to the Super Bowl goes through Kansas City. Now, after the Chiefs destroyed the Jaguars last Sunday, their safety Tashaun Gibson told the NFL Network that the road to the Super Bowl goes through the Kansas City Chiefs. They are 5-0, of course, and they're going to be playing on Sunday night the next couple of weeks. Patriots look to be catching their stride a little bit, but Kansas City, a house of fire right now. Is it a good call or a bad call to say that the road to the Super Bowl goes through the Kansas City Chiefs, Fred?
It's a bad call. We don't know where the road to the Super Bowl goes through yet. They played 5 games. Granted, they played well, but it's way too soon to make a decision like that. Bad call. Wait a minute. Rodney, the playlist again?
Freebird, baby.
Yeah, lead it up.
If I leave it tomorrow.
You know what we should do one day?
Love that.
You know, all right, I'm sorry. Wait.
You know what we should do one day? We should have request time.
Yes.
And we should have people call, and we'll see if you have it on your playlist.
Right.
It's an extensive playlist.
We should do
it's
that.
It's an extensive playlist.
One day, really let's do that. That'd be funny.
Like eclectic.
I can
go everywhere. I can even go country on my playlist. I got some country. Oh, yeah.
All right, we'll do that.
I'm a Paisley fan. All right, what's the question again?
That wacky Brad Paisley.
Good call or bad call to say the road to the Super Bowl goes through Kansas City in the AFC.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess we'll find out this weekend, right?
Yeah,
we'll find out how real Kansas City is when they go to New England and play, but they are certainly playing well. I'm not ready to say it all goes through Kansas City.
Okay.
Pittsburgh is playing well again. The Pats obviously going to be there. And Kansas City has yet to have any kind of, chink or bump in the armor along the way and see if they can recover from that. So I'm waiting to see them kind of have some adversity and then come back for it before I will anoint them as the home team or the home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So, yeah, bad call that it's going through Kansas City.
What do you say, Vic?
Bad call. We played five games out of 16. The Rams are right there with Kansas City. I say it goes to the Coliseum. It goes to the Collie. It's going to go to the Collie. You know, Mahomes has been unconscious.
But the AFC, Vic, where's the AFC going through?
Oh, the AFC.
Is it going through New England or is it going through Kansas City?
It always goes through New England.
What about Pittsburgh? They're not there.
Huh? Oh, that Le'Veon Bell thing. They're still in chaos.
Gotcha.
Although James Conner is running the ball.
We know the NFC is going through the Collie. Yeah.
Anything is going through the Collie, man.
Talk to him,
with
Vic.
The Rams. It's not going through Kansas City, Arrowhead Stadium. Patrick Mahomes. They're going to solve Mahomes. Mahomes, look, the Chiefs never finished. When was the last time they went to the Super Bowl, the Kansas City Chiefs? They don't finish.
When Len Dawson was throwing the rock?
Hello. Hola. Yeah. They don't finish. They look good now. No. I love New England on Sunday.
And to your point, Vic and Fred brought this up, too. The Chiefs started out 5-0 last year. They won.
Yep.
They lost 6 of 7 after that.
And lost their first playoff game at home.
Yeah. So you can't say that it's all sewn up 5 weeks into a season. And that's good call, bad call.
All right, Kevin, when we come back, the dump. The sports news dump.
Don't you do it, Jason. Don't you play that sound.
Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete, AM 570 LA Sports.
Post Malone.
I know.
Post Malone was on last night. Vic wasn't happy with Post Malone.
He was on something.
Yeah, he was on something. The Emmys. Yeah. Did you see it, Kev?
I didn't. I heard about it.
Oh, yeah. He was on a little something.
He's never been the most put together, Kev.
No, the live performance is not great for Post Malone.
No.
No.
Great music, though.
Yeah.
I really like his stuff.
Oh, wait. Vic, you saw Post Malone.
Oh, God.
Post Malone. I'd rather have Karl Malone perform last night. I didn't take Jeff Hornacek. I'll take Horny. I mean, what the hell? Was he lip syncing? Was he going live?
I don't know what
What's
Post
the mystique
doing?
With Post Malone? He's got some nice face tattoos, but did he show up? He didn't show up last night at the AMAs.
He didn't show up.
You got to show up and
Come
perform,
on, it's game
man.
Time.
Yeah, I know he had a glass of wine, a little red wine. He had a party.
Is that all he had?
When you were at the stage,
is
man.
Is that all he had?
Oh, man, I don't know. I wasn't at the table. But Come bottom on, line is, Post Malone, get your game up. Go into the post and post him up.
He needed to be present, not post.
I was shocked at the ineptitude of Post Malone last night.
Yeah.
And the AMA is a big award, man.
Big award.
Big show.
Your girl, Cardi B, did her thing.
Woo, Cardi B.
Yeah.
She was tremendous. She took home three AMAs. And of course, Taylor Swift set the record. She broke the record for most female trophies. So good night for the AMAs.
Vic, why are you more fired up about Post Malone than you were Alabama football?
Listen, you know, music and sports are intertwined. It's a cross-pollination. Passion. It's the passion. But yeah, Post Malone, man. I wanted to see him rock it. You know, basically, I got like a lukewarm Post Malone.
You know what I want to do?
Malone, I'm telling you, would have brought it.
I want to go to Coachella with Vic.
Mm. Do you?
Yeah.
Vic, when's the last time you were at Coachella?
I've never been to Coachella.
Oh, see?
I feel Coachella.
Vic was at Woodstock.
Yeah,
but he wasn't at
Woodstock.
He was at Woodstock.
I was on my way to Woodstock when they closed the New York State Freeway.
No. Shut up.
I was like,
Vic, you got to tell me that. Tell me.
I was on my way. No one wanted to go with me. I said, listen, there's a big crazy music show down the highway. We got to go. I was caddying at the time.
You were with who, Vic?
I was caddying at the time in upstate New York. I was like 10, 11 years old, how old I was. Who knows? But I know I had to go. But yet I couldn't get there physically because they closed the freeway.
Really?
Well, they closed the New York State Freeway.
For how long?
They didn't know what they had.
They had no idea what was going.
Yeah.
A million people hit that, you know, Maxi Asker's farm, man. No one knew. It was crazy wacky.
So you got on the road with who? With your buddies or what?
I had some crazy kind of Volkswagen at the time.
Yeah?
And it was just me. Because the caddies were a little shallow. They were not enlightened. The caddies I was with.
They were not enlightened.
They were trying to make some money. I said, you know what? This is a big weekend. Forget the caddying. Get your tuchuses to Max's farm. Woodstock, New York, man.
Vic, we got to continue that conversation at some point, Vic.
We want to thank Post Malone for the inspiration.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Petros and Money are next on AM 570 LA Sports.